Welcome to the Natural Running Network. My name is Richard Diaz, and what I hope to do is introduce you to some amazing athletes and luminaries from the sports science community, and what has come to be expected, I'll provide some highly opinionated rants on all aspects of endurance sports and my current favorite, obstacle course racing. But before I get started, I want to give a shout out to Human Octane. If you're the kind of person who pushes the limit, then you've got to check out Human Octane Apparel. Training and racing apparel designed by OCR athletes, and these guys just get it. Everything they make dries lightning fast, has zippered pockets, is abrasion resistant in high contact areas without bulky padding. I've gotten to know these guys, and trust me, they're going to out-innovate the competition when it comes to OCR gear. Check them out at humanoctane.com. Now sit tight, grab a cup of coffee, and let's do this. All right, here we are once again. I've been working really, really hard to finally get Dr. Emily back on the show with me. Those of you that have followed my podcast know that she's my go-to gal when it comes to anything to do with structural integrity, ground contact, foot, anything to do with effective movement patterns. And Emily is a podiatrist. She is the founder of Evidence-Based Fitness Academy. We can go for 15 minutes just talking about all the things that Emily's doing, but suffice to say, it's a limited amount of time that we have. So what I want to do is just go right ahead and say, Emily, say hello to folks.
Hi, welcome. Thank you for having me on your podcast again. It's always an honor.
Well, it was interesting. You know, we spoke of it early on, but it's been 5 years that you and I have been going back and forth.
I know, it makes me feel old. I'm just kidding.
Dude, don't even start. You know, by the way, if you want to, I'm heading to Mexico in December to celebrate my 65th birthday.
Oh, nice.
No, not nice. You're supposed to, people say, usually when you tell people you're getting that old, instead of saying, hey, happy birthday, they say, oh, congratulations.
That you made it.
Yeah. Used to be they would say things like, oh, congratulations. But now that I'm going to hit 65, they pause. So they go, oh, congratulations. It's almost like they're dumbfounded. They don't know really what the appropriate answer would be to that. Anyway. So, Emily, as we discussed prior to going live here, what I'm hoping to accomplish here in the next little bit is I want to talk about the sequence of events that occurs when we initiate ground contact as we run, and what would be the appropriate thing to do. Or we spoke of it as being the preferred thing to do. I'm not even going to talk about appropriate. Let's talk about preferred thing to do. And I believe, and you can slap me around if you need to, but I believe that there is a better way to make ground contact when we're running. And I think ultimately, in the course of making ground contact in this preferred method, we can create more generation of force, more power, and also become more stable and resistant to injury. Would you agree that there's a place like that?
Absolutely. That's really the key to running injury free or preventing running related injuries, is that relationship between the ground and the body, the foot.
Okay. Right? Now, you corrected me, and see, this is why I keep coming back to you over the last 5 years, is because I'm a little thick. It takes me a little while to learn things, but you had done a good job clearing some things up for me today that I had not thought about. And I think a lot of people, when they think about what occurs when they are running or landing, they're thinking in terms of contractile forces. And the contractile forces people typically speak of are muscular contractile forces. So in other words, and you corrected me, the eccentric loading, which I would expect it to have been elongation of musculature, and then ultimately isometric contraction where things stabilize, and then the shortening phase where you are accelerating and pushing off the ground. So changes in muscle. And you had corrected me by telling me that in fact what is occurring is the muscles are isometric through this whole series of sequencing. And what really is changing in length is the myofascia, which is where the change in length is really occurring. So could you kind of do a better job with what I just said and explain what in fact we're talking about?
Sure. So I think everyone who's listening often thinks of, okay, when we're running, jumping, dynamic, you're going to be decelerating. And then when you decelerate, essentially what you're doing is restoring the potential energy for then the acceleration, which is the next phase. So typically we think of deceleration as eccentrics, which is what you were saying. So we're going through an eccentric, which is a lengthening phase, and then you're going into a concentric, which is your power or your shortening phase. And so people think that that's kind of the way that you want to train for running, jumping, walking, dynamic, rhythmic, that's the key thing here, movement. However, what research shows is that the muscles are actually contracting isometrically. So they're staying the same length, and anytime you create an isometric contraction, there's no shortening or lengthening of the muscle fibers. You're essentially creating a stiffening response and an increase in tension. And then what's moving and allowing the lengthening and the shortening that we typically think of our muscles doing is actually the fascia. So why that's important to understand is that you have to train your muscles then for more of an isometric quick stiffening, and then you have to train your fascia to be a rubber band. And that is the most important thing. And the rubber band and the elasticity and kind of think like a kangaroo jumping around, that's really the fascia that's allowing them or us to be very springy. And it's actually not housed within the muscles. It's pivotal to changing your programming or your training to understanding that concept.
Right. Now, what I believe to be the case, and you really opened my mind this morning to a lot of thoughts, but essentially I think I was on the right path. It's just that I was thinking in terms of the musculature and the fascia operating as one, where in fact they're not. They're operating independently of each other. So in other words, as you suggested, and what I've learned from some of the things I've read that you've written and some of the work of Dr. Nigg, this muscle tuning theory is essentially all about how the muscles are isometrically contracting to dampen the vibrations that occur when we make ground contact, and the elasticity of the fascia is what's allowing us to actually move the joints, right?
Yes, exactly. So if you do not have sufficient stiffness in the muscle or the isometric, you're not allowing the fascia to move. Like the fascia needs to be on a stiff, stable base to slide almost like a sleeve over the muscles. So they kind of dance among each other. And most injuries that I see in my office with runners and endurance athletes and such is directly related to insufficient stiffness. And then they stress the way that their fascia acts like a rubber band.
Right. Now, and what kind of bears truth to all of this is that you never really talk about muscle injuries. It's always connective tissue disorders, right? So there's a plantar fasciitis, for example, or the IT band. All this is connective tissue. It's really not got to do with the muscle, right?
But exactly. So that's what supports this theory by Dr. Nigg and this approach of looking at impact injuries or just the training of the loading response because of exactly what you said. To me, that just kind of validates that exactly what we're saying is like, that's on point. Makes sense.
Now, so getting back to the sequence of events and the way you would make contact with the ground, I teach people that they should initiate ground contact. You know, where it gets kind of edgy is when you talk about forefoot to midfoot, people get confused with that. But let's just, for the sake of argument, say the front of your foot. And so what happens is as you're starting to find the ground and then you're starting to take on load, you're actually causing a stretch reflex, right, up through the connective tissue, and all the while according to what you're saying, is there's this isometric contraction in the musculature to dampen the vibration upon ground contact, and then that energy that's being received from this lengthening of the fascia gets to a place where once your foot is entirely in contact with the ground, your knee is pretty well just in line with or even ahead of your great toe. Now you have good ankle flexion. So this whole system down there, I guess it's the subtalar joint, is kind of locking down. You're getting stable. This is what you refer to as foot to core sequencing, right? You get to this place where this loading effect from the ground rides all the way up into your hip, and you have this column of stability you've created, which sets you up for a very opportune moment to create this generate or harvest this generation of elastic energy to create force.
Yes, exactly. And what I want to add to that is that I want listeners to understand that this has to be happening before your foot even strikes the ground. So,
excuse me for cutting you off, but I wanted to tell you that this is the thing that I had the hardest time wrapping my head around for years. You told me this, and I'm like, okay, yeah, fine, sure. And I was having a hard time with it. I'm not going to lie to you. But since, and even recently, I have been very vocal in explaining that this does, in fact, occur. And my analogy that I use when I try to explain this to people, I'll have somebody standing in front of me in group, and I'll say, okay, I'm getting ready to punch you in the stomach. And just that information that's being taken on already begins a sequence of events. The person will start to contract the musculature and their abdominal wall to prepare for this impending impact, right?
Yep.
So it's kind of like that, right?
Yeah, no, it is. It's exactly that, that there's always a anticipation of what's going to happen. And how I get people to understand this a little bit more is, you know, kind of two things, is that you need to always be in control of your environment. Your body, your nervous system wants to be in control of your environment. So it's either considered your preactive or your anticipatory, or you would be reactive. And just looking at those two words, you know that if you're reacting to something, you're always going to be slower because you have to, information comes in, you process it, and then you react. Like, that takes way too much time. Your body running and impact and all of that is happening way too fast, that your nervous system pre-anticipates what's going to be encountered. That's the only way that you can run efficiently and not get injured, or properly, you know, load and unload impact forces through the elasticity of the tissue. You know, that's critical. The second thing kind of related around that is where I start talking about barefoot stimulation and foot stimulation is your movement patterns are only as good as the information you bring in. So that's where shoes and barefoot stimulation and all of that good stuff that we often talk about is so critical, because if you don't bring in enough information, or you don't bring in accurate information because of your shoes or something, then your loading response is not going to be accurate. That's when you also get injured.
Yeah, I tell people it's like you're late to the party.
Exactly.
And so since you brought that up, I think it's a good time to talk about, and we beat this to death a million times, and I just can't help myself. As a matter of fact, I did a clinic in Vermont a couple weeks ago, and a couple of the people that came to the clinic were wearing these big Hokas.
Mm-hmm.
I actually had one of the girls throw her shoes away. I didn't tell her to throw them away, but she did. And she ended up actually doing the clinic barefoot or in flip-flops, because she just was feeling this tension that I was putting out, because I was so dead set against this blocking of this afferent information that mm-hmm. the body's trying to obtain in order to make appropriate and timely decisions.
Exactly.
Without even trying to sound like a barefoot advocate, and when I say barefoot advocate, I'm talking about as a runner.
Right.
I have to tell you that recently I took some people out on pavement to run a mile barefoot that had never done it before, and nor had I, for that matter, purposely gone out to run barefoot on pavement for a given distance.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little apprehensive at first, and as it turned out, that about a quarter of the mile in, I actually started to find a relationship with ground contact that kind of surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually got better the longer I went. I should also share with you that one of the women that was running with me is turning 73 years old, and she was actually running faster than everyone else and actually enjoyed the ride. Now, having said all that, I'm not an advocate of running on unnatural surfaces barefoot because it's just a crapshoot. You never know when, in fact, you're going to get injured by some sharp object or what have you. But I am absolutely an advocate of people running barefoot on natural surfaces occasionally to reignite the relationship with this feedback mechanism, to retrain this whole neural response, what you refer to as neuromechanical feedback mechanisms, right?
Yes.
Am I paying attention or what?
Yeah, no, good job. You are.
But the,
you have to have that information coming in. I mean, it's to kind of simply put it, if you bring in crap, you put out crap.
Right.
I mean, that's the easiest way for someone to understand that. And or if I'm only giving you, and this is the big thing with people who don't do barefoot movement or aren't in minimal shoes or aren't tuned in to their feet, is they don't know any difference. So to them, that is normal to not have information coming from their feet and create motor patterns and stabilization without that information. To them is normal. Once you start doing barefoot movement, which I know that you can totally vouch for, and obviously everyone who's listening who does barefoot movement, and you start to experience and you're like, holy shit, I've been missing this information. You can't go back. Like, I can't wear like thick New Balance shoes. Like, I can't even wear Nike Freeze anymore. They're too thick for me. And it, you then kind of like what you don't know that you don't know, you are unexposed to.
Right. And it's actually kind of sad when you think about it. You know, it's like people don't know. By the way, I coach people internationally, people I may never meet. And commonly what happens with people that I don't meet, I'm helping them to transition away from what I'd like to call inappropriate gait patterns. The solution I provide them with is to take their shoes off, get on a grassy field, and occasionally run barefoot. You would think that initially you'd think, wow, he wants me to run barefoot and I'm injured. I don't have that protection I used to have.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be inappropriate. I've had people testify to me that in the course of, you know, engaging some barefoot running during the week on natural surfaces, injuries go away like really fast.
Mm-hmm.
Even plantar fasciitis. People that are having all these issues, they're just not landing properly. And given the natural opportunity to have these devices and this afferent feedback start to become more apparent, they self-correct.
Oh, I mean, that's a huge part of it. I think people get too, like, I don't know, people are kind of weak, that they want, like, you know, the orthotic or the support or the injection or the, you know, whatever, not understanding that the body is very resilient. And if you just train it the right way or feed it the information, like what you're speaking about, some of this barefoot stimulation throughout the week, that you get stronger or a lot of your injuries go away. It's you got to give the body more credit than what it is, which is kind of funny that even podiatrists, most podiatrists are kind of crazy, but that's another conversation. You know, they'll actually say, like, no, like, you have to wear supportive shoes and orthotics because the weight of our body and gravity on this concrete and these unnatural surfaces, everybody's foot is going to collapse and then the world is just going to end. And, like, that's what they make it sound like. Where it's like, we were not born with shoes on. Like, if your arch was not designed to support itself, you would be a baby with little orthotics coming out. Like, it doesn't, you know what I mean? Like, give the body a little bit more credit. You know, like, I don't freak out when a patient gets a fracture or gets a certain infection, I'm like, the body's going to heal itself. Like, you got to give the body more credit than what it is, you know? And so that kind of goes along with what you're saying of, like, give your body, challenge your body. If you challenge your body the appropriate way with barefoot stimulation, it ultimately becomes stronger. It's a survival strategy of the human body.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm telling you, it's like my day job is going around and working with people and helping them to find this relationship with the ground, not just from a standpoint of injury prevention, but performance orientation. Because if you're landing badly often, here's the way it works. I have people that I say their strength to weight ratio is such that their body is very forgiving. They get away with a lot. And it's like people think, gosh, this guy's bold. You know, they look at this fat old man saying, you run like shit. And here's a guy maybe running a 230 marathon. And in fact, his running gait is just atrocious. Where if he was to change and correct and improve upon the way he's running, his likelihood of being able to run more often with less injury, with greater force production, greater stride length, all of that exists when you're in harmony with the whole systematic approach to ground force and the elastic energy you can harvest.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, yep. I like that harmony. Like I call it, it's like a symbiotic relationship, or it's a homeostatic, you know, but I like that harmony as well. I think that's a great way to look at it.
Well, and that some people have a hard time understanding where the ground contact has anything to do with core facilitation. They think that for them to work their core, they have to get like in a supine position and do some kind of isometric or even changing in range of motion contractions off the ground, where they're basically isolating movement patterns in their core. To me, that's just useless. I mean, you could have a really strong abdominal region that is disconnected from the rest of your body and have no functionality whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, that's why, you know, I do activations on the floor. I think that's a great way to activate and start to kind of like slap awake the core. But then ultimately, I do agree, you have to get standing up, which is one thing, and getting introduced to gravity. And then your feet and your core are connected during dynamic movement. So it's a coordinated reaction of how your core works. It's not, you know, I'm going to isometrically brace and then kind of crunch in certain ways. Or if I'm doing a plank, like I still like planks and things like that. But I feel like they should be in almost like a flow. So I never have people hold a plank for like a minute or 5 minutes. Like, I'm awesome, I hold my plank for 5 minutes. Like, that means nothing. Like, you're probably going to get injured more than, you know, the 80-year-old who doesn't even work out, than because you're not building an appropriate style of strength that actually transfers to dynamic movement. So if you're doing floor-based stuff, I think that it should be either in an activation way or it should be in a flow. And you're finding a relaxation and a stiffening, like a dance, just like your body does with the ground throughout that movement.
Well, another thing that comes to mind while we're talking about this, and speaking of the core region, one of the things that bothers me a lot is that it's not uncommon where a person might go to a physical therapist because they've got a running-related injury, and the first thing that comes out of their mouth is they start talking about glute instability, and they start getting them on the ground doing clamshells and things like this to try to isolate the glute med to try to get that firing again. And then they'll go right back out and land poorly, which puts them in a very untenable position, unstable, and then they reactivate the injury. And I just tell them, I said, you could spend 10 minutes on the ground doing these exercises that are going to be of little or no use to you if you spend 90 minutes running badly. And so people will ask me, what's the best core or glute exercise for a runner? And my comment, and they almost think that I'm being funny, but I'm not. I said, the best exercise you can do, reduce the injuries at the glute or instability in the hips, is proper running mechanics. Get the foot closer to your center of mass, get stable, and develop force production. And every time you make contact with the ground appropriately, you got that floor to core sequencing, right? And then so you're ultimately creating a very synergistic, or like I said, harmonious contractile force from the ground right up into your core.
Yes, which is, I mean, that's, like you said, that's how it works. So you have to, it has to be specific to the movement or match what you're doing. And that really is the most effective way. So it's not, you know, that's where you could be like, oh, okay, you see bodybuilders who have like a six pack, but then their stomach sticks out and then they get a herniated disc. Like they're, it's a very different way of training it. What you've said as far as your foot to core connection, that's really how the core has to be trained. So getting up right away and just simply running barefoot, doing this the stimulation with proper running mechanics, that in itself could be their core training. I agree 100% with you.
Cool. Jeez, I like it when I'm not wrong. All right, so look, let me just kind of take this to kind of a summary for a minute before we go to the next phase here.
Okay.
So what we're basically discussing is the fact that there is a way to run, and in the course of doing the proper movement patterns, this harmonious sequence of events is going to occur, and you're going to become stable. And stability is key to offsetting the potential for injury and actually creating force production. We good with that?
Yes.
All right. And then we need to get back to garnering this afferent feedback from the ground so that our body becomes more in harmony. I'm doing it for you again. With
you.
The ground force. So we're able to allow the body to contract or deal with ground forces in a timely manner, because this surprise that we get when the feedback is absent is where all the disruption comes from and the injuries are most prominent, right?
Correct.
All right. Now, so we're suggesting that it would be better to be closer to the ground with whatever, I mean, in these races, you got to wear shoes, but you can't just decide one day that you've been in this mattress of a shoe to drop off into this very, very minimal shoe and keep pounding the ground inappropriately and try to keep up with the same volume that you had in the past. Because just that transition alone is going to throw your body for a loop, and there's potential for all sorts of new injuries. So you need to kind of find the ground eventually and then make your way to it, probably gradually, I think. And I'm going to let you give feedback on that. But I'd like to see people will ask me all the time, I'm in an 11 millimeter drop and I'm looking at going minimal. What do you think I should do? And they're almost waiting for me to say, I want you to go to zero drop. And a lot of times that's not a good thing to tell people, especially in the absence of even knowing what their potential range of motion is around that joint. So if you touch on that for me just a little bit.
Yeah, so whenever I'm guiding a patient on transitioning different levels of heel-toe drop or different levels of support in the shoe, maybe different levels of cushion, is obviously doing it gradual, same thing as what you're saying. Sometimes we think we need to have like gross changes, like large changes for it to be a lot, but your body's very like micro sensitive. So micro changes still do a very big shift to the nervous system and to the body. So I would agree that, okay, if you're an 11 millimeter drop, to go down to like an 8 millimeter dropper, you know, you're slowly incrementally decreasing it. But there's other characteristics within shoes that you can take away. If your shoe now has a heel counter, stay at the same heel toe drop, but take away the heel counter. Or if your shoe has a shank throughout it, then you could take away the shank. You could choose one that has less cushion. So there's features of the shoes that you can kind of incrementally decrease. Just going from an 11 millimeter to a zero drop, but it still has a heel counter. Well, now you still don't have the complete freedom of movement that you need. So understanding all those aspects. There's one aspect to a shoe that I think it's, to me, it's the marker of like a really good shoe from a natural movement perspective, is if you can take a shoe and wring it out like a rag, like the long way. A lot of the Nike ads would fold the shoe or like roll the shoe like a sandwich or whatever, I don't know. Kind of the
A wrap.
Back of, yeah, exactly. Like a burrito. I don't know. I think everyone knows exactly the abs that they have. That's not the way that you want to think of the shoot. That's showing like, okay, it doesn't have a shank throughout it. But, okay, who cares to some degree? Because the foot is a rotational structure and a spiraling structure. People don't think of the foot as a spiral. But your foot just spirals. So if you take the shoe the long way and just rotate it like a rag, the more that you can kind of wring out your shoe, the more freedom of movement or the power of rotation you can get out of that foot. Nike Free, again, I do consulting for Nike, so I'm not knocking Nike. But a lot of the shoes, the Frees, all of the Frees have a very low rotation element to them. Versus, let's say, like a Vibram Five Finger or Vivo Barefoot has a very torsional element or spiral element to the shoe. Those are the only shoes that I like to wear because I train a lot of body tension stuff and like aerials and blah, blah, blah. And yeah, let's say if I'm at the gym doing rings, I'm key on getting full foot contraction, so like full plantar flexion of the foot and engaging all of the intrinsic muscles of my feet. So I need a shoe that allows that. A lot of shoes actually block the pointing of the foot, if that's an easy way to think of it. And that's a way that you can also test your shoe, is put your shoes on. Can you point your foot as much as you would if you were barefoot? If you can't, technically that's an energy leak from a total body tension perspective.
Okay, so real quick, when you say pointing the foot, are you talking about plantar flexion? You just like being able to extend the ankle?
Yep. So plantar flex the ankle and point your toes. For the guys, I mean, you're pointing your foot. Like, it's probably something that a lot of men don't do. I was a gymnast, so for me, I've trained for years that my foot engaging, pointing, just like a dancer points or a gymnast points, actually harnesses power in my core. So when I do pull-ups, I point my toes as hard as I can because then I'm optimizing my core tension, which technically makes my shoulders and my hands and my grip stronger so I can do more pull-ups. It's understanding how to use tension to your benefit. A lot of people, the foot is just like, bleh. Like it's in the shoe, it's not engaged, it's not connected, which means it is related to when you're on the ground as well. Like you have to engage your foot on the ground, which is the whole short foot stuff. But if you're doing anything in the air, because I know there's a lot of, you know, obstacle course racing, you're climbing something, right? Like your foot is connected to your grip strength through a total body tension. So you need to have maximal movement and engagement of the foot. Regardless if you're on the ground or you're in the air, it still ties in.
Wow. I had never thought about that, but that's really powerful stuff. And I think a lot of people will get a lot from that. That's especially this audience. So listen to that, folks. Point your toes as you're going across the rig to get more facial integrity through your grip strength.
Yeah, and just kind of, you know, the way that I explain it, so if someone is like pushing off of a step or you're climbing something or whatever, is always think of your foot requiring follow through. Think of like you're throwing a basketball or you're throwing a football, or you're even doing a golf swing. There's a follow through in every movement. However, a lot of people will run, jump, step, and then they just like shortchange the foot. They don't have follow through. A dancer and a gymnast and someone who like really appreciates the foot and does barefoot movement always has follow through. The follow through is a point, you know, so it is, you know, but you're pushing all the way through the distal tips of the digits. That's your follow. There has to be a continuity of energy throughout that foot. I don't know if that analogy helps some of the listeners.
It does. It makes good sense. Now, the other thing that I wanted to touch on while we're still talking about this transition in the shoes is that I see a lot of clients and people I work with that will race in minimal shoes, minimal meaning that they're closer to the ground, zero drop, because they're on terrain and the primary focus is to have traction. So they're, you know, kind of spiky on the bottom of the foot, but very, very low to the ground and very minimal in design. And then the whole time they're training, they're in some big Moken shoe And there's a lot of confusion that lies between that transition between those two shoe types. And I tell people all the time that I want them to find a format of shoe that works for them and stick with it across the board. So if you can't find a training shoe that you like that is designed very much like the shoe you race in, that's not good.
Yeah, I mean, you always want to match. That's one of the biggest things with running and endurance athletes is you're not going to switch something, or you can't have a shift in consistency of how you're training your nervous system from race day to training day. It has to match. You know, so I do agree in, you know, finding a shoe, and there's great shoes that are out there that are going to meet their needs from a training and a race perspective.
Cool. Now, so drum roll. I know that for the last few years, you've been working really hard on this project, and I'm excited to allow you to share what you're up to with these insoles that you're using now, or you're producing now, and the whole concept with yoga mats and the whole thing. Let's just, here you go.
Okay, cool. So I was speaking about, you know, you have to be tuned into your feet. Most shoes, even the most minimal shoes, still are a barrier between your nervous system and the ground. So the information and your nervous system. And so for the past couple of years, I've been developing a proprioceptive material that you can either train on or put in your shoes. And we've launched the January of this year. It's called Naboso Technology, N-A-B-O-S-O Technology. Naboso happens to mean barefoot in Czech. And it's kind of a montage towards Dr. Yanda and kind of my studying of Czech philosophy and things like that. But it's a small nerve, which means it's specific to the nerves in the hands and the feet, more specifically the feet, proprioceptive material that, again, we have a surface that you can do all of your barefoot movement prep, kettlebell swings on it, the mat. And then we have insoles. And the insoles is something that you can wear into all of your shoes. It doesn't have to be just minimal shoes. Any shoe that you want, you'll put the insole in it. It's designed to be worn without socks because you need to get that maximal stimulation. And the research behind textured insoles is astounding on what it does to your postural control, your joint position sense, your gait parameters, your contact phase and the way that you're introduced to loading responses. So super, super exciting. Our insoles just launched. They're available now. And they're a proprioceptive insole, which helps you to create more accurate loading responses or neuromuscular control.
Now, you know what the next question is, right?
How much are they?
No. No. The next question is, when are you going to send me a pair?
Oh, yes, I will. So they're being manufactured right now. So everything that was ordered was on a pre-order. They're going to arrive in the States probably in a couple weeks. And then we're going crazy over them because the response has been amazing. All of the prototypes that we've sent out, we've sent a bunch of prototypes. I can get you one of our prototypes now if you want.
Cool.
And we've had cyclists use it. We've had skiers use it. I've had figure skaters put it in their boots or their skates or in their cleats. We've had people who just kind of walk around in that. I mean, the pre-study stuff leading up to our actual insole that we've come up with, the response is always like sick. And I'm not influencing it anyway. I just say like, hey, this is the research. You listen to your body. You see how you feel in these. You see how your movement patterns correct or shift. You ask yourself, oh, am I paying attention to my feet much more? Do I notice my feet? All of that's called tuning in, and you keep your nervous system tuned into your foot-ground relationship that ultimately is going to translate to better movement. It's amazing, the results.
Wow. Okay, so now the other question. What do they cost?
So they are $50 for a pair, which is a great cost when you think of like Dr. Scholl's and
that's a good price point.
One thing that I do want people to know is that this is not an orthotic. It's not a biomechanical insole that's trying to shift your mechanics in any way. It is purely neuromuscular. So for those who are very minimal shoe, Vivo barefoot, things like that, where they don't want any support at all, there's absolutely no support. You're going to still be able to wring out the shoe, roll the shoe, do everything that you've already been able to do with your minimal shoe. This is not going to restrict that in any way. It's just going to bring in that very important proprioceptive information that you're not getting. No shoe to date has that stimulation in it. I don't care how minimal it is. It's not bringing in this specific proprioceptive information.
That's very cool. So now I think what we ought to do, and I haven't even prepped you for this, but what we ought to do is we ought to have some kind of contest to give a pair away.
Ah, that would be a very good idea.
What can we make people do to get a pair of these things?
Man, I'm going to, you like totally put me on the spot and I can't think of anything.
Yeah, we'll think about it. So let's just table that for now. Let people know that, in fact, we will be giving a pair of these away. It may be in a later show, and I'll discuss it. Emily won't be there, but we're going to have you do – Emily and I will talk about it. We'll find a way to reward someone for doing something very cool, and we're going to spread the word because I think Emily is spot on with this. I trust her more than anybody else I know in the medical industry where all this is concerned, so – you trust me, you trust her, we're going to get you some insoles.
Awesome.
Emily, it has been amazing to speak with you once again. I tried to get you to come to Vermont. Now they're talking about getting me out to New Jersey. I'm getting closer to
you.
Oh, yes. Jersey's close, girl.
I know.
Yeah.
That is. Where in New Jersey?
I don't know yet. I've got some people that are banging on me. They want me to come to Jersey, and I'm thinking probably – it won't be till next year, but you'll be hot in it by then. And you and I got to meet before I get way too old.
That's my mission for
you. Either that or West Coast. I'm doing San Francisco towards the end of the year. Not a bad place to be around November. Or we could
do a
clinic in Mexico too, because I'm going to be there in early December.
Oh, there you go. I actually am as well.
Are you really?
How
Where
funny?
Are you going?
Playa del Carmen.
I'm going to be in, I think it's called Hualto or something like that. It's an all-inclusive resort there. I got about 5-6 friends going with me. We're not going to say anything that makes any sense, though. It's going to be all about tequila tasting and kind of dampening my sorrows for having achieved this lengthy age.
You should be proud.
Yeah. Congratulations, right? So did we give a website? Just to make sure, did I get a website out there?
No.
Let's do it.
Okay. So to learn more information on my approach to movement, everything links off of my main website, which is ebfafitness.com. Again, ebfafitness.com. That links to my YouTube channel that has different exercises and videos. I speak a lot about Run Injury Free on there. My blog links off of there, but my blog is barefootstrongblog.com. And then the Noboso proprioceptive company is nabosotechnology.com. Again, Noboso is N-A-B-O-S-O technology.com. We have the barefoot training surface and the proprioceptive insoles.
Well, I'm going to message you with my address and such so you can get me a pair of those, because I'll be banging the drum all around the country with those on my feet.
No, that's awesome. I really want to get you a pair.
Okay, cool. Thank you so much, Emily.
Thank you. Have an amazing day.
You too. Well, friends, it's time to bring another show to a close. Be sure and tune in to us next week. We've got a lot of great content in store for you. I want you to tell your friends to check us out. You can always find us on Facebook. Simply go search the Natural Running Network. Drop us a message. I'd love to learn more about you and the things you do. And until then, you have an amazing day.